Russian President Vladimir Putin voted in parliamentary elections, and a ballot that's expected to give the ruling United Russia Party even greater dominance over the Duma, or lower house.
In New Jersey, where police have found a number of suspect devices in a backpack, it comes as the manhunt continues in New York to find whoever carried out the bombing in Manhattan, which injured 29 people. That explosion there in New Jersey was when the police were examining this backpack of five devices, and one exploded. The others haven't, so they're hoping it will contain more evidence that they can now examine in a bit more detail.
My point is very simple. We've got to use Brexit as an opportunity to reconfigure our relationship with the EU, but also recognise America, Canada, Australia, India are all opportunities as well. So we've got a campaign, and it's a very simple campaign in three words. London is open.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell for this Monday. It is September 19th, 2016, 5:10 in the morning. Welcome to it. Another business day, too, ahead of us. It's going to be a busy, busy, busy week. Lots going on today. The United Nations General Meeting is this week. Lots of that activity happening in New York. It is Federal Reserve Week. It is Bank of Japan Week, Interest Rate Week. Lots going on, so let's get right to it. First, to the WGN Market Desk this morning, where Dow futures seem to be positive this morning. Investors like something. Dow futures are up 77 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are up as well. All of the arrows pointing up in Asia and Europe this morning. What a rarity. Also in this country today, crude oil is trading up almost 65 cents a barrel at $43.68. There is some developing news. So while you slept overnight from our intel desk, the Hanjin Shipping Company, you know, all of these chartered giant cargo ships that have been parked in the ocean in places all over the world, a judge has ruled that they all have to go back to their owner and return to their ports. This is a story that's still developing this morning, but Hanjin is the world's seventh largest container. It filed for receivership last month, leaving more than 100 ships and their cargo at sea, threatening to snarl U.S. freight traffic. Some of these ships, many of them, had cargo bound for the United States or for places like Target and Walmart. So now we know that these ships will no longer be stranded in the ocean. In some of these cases, the crews of these ships were running out of food and other supplies. They will now return to their home ports. They've been ordered back to their owners today. Also, we're following another developing story. This is one that we've been watching actually for some time, and that is the Bank of Japan is considering what to do about interest rates in that country, just as the Federal Reserve does in this country. A two-day meeting of the Federal Reserve begins this week, and the Bank of Japan could upstage the Fed with an announcement of some sort of rate adjustment in Japan going forward. Here's another problem that's facing a lot of people, a lot of companies, a lot of actual employees, and that is student loans. Believe it or not, these people you, like you and me who had student loans, who have student loans, $1.2 trillion in student loan debt is what the estimate is these days. And there is a new effort by some employees, because they want to attract millennial employees, to pay some of the student loans as benefits. And in our CEO spotlight today is the CEO of a company called Peanut Butter, based in Chicago. And this is a company that helps other firms and businesses arrange benefits to offer partial payment, repayment on an annual basis of people's student loans. And David Aronson is with us this morning, the founder and CEO of Peanut Butter. He's one of the founders of this company, pushing it forward. It's now become very popular across the country, with other competitors stepping forward as well. David, welcome to the Opening Bell this morning. I guess, you know, let's start with giving people a sense of just how big this student loan debt is.
If you own a car, you might pay $300, $400 a month to drive your car. Imagine entering the workforce and having that same amount that you need to pay every month for each of the next 10 years just to pay down your student loans. So the average person who graduated with the class of 2016 entered the workforce with $37,000 in student debt. If you compound that over 10 years at a 6% interest rate, which is pretty common, they're going to be paying about $350 or about the same amount as a car payment.
That is keeping some people out of the workforce or pushing them in different directions in the workforce. How is it impacting companies?
For employers, student loans represent an opportunity. It's an opportunity to create engagement they're not getting through their other benefits. Traditionally, employers have used benefits to help ensure tenure, to convince employees to join them. But employees aren't taking them up on the benefits that they offer. It's hard to get people to enroll in your 401k. Two-thirds of people in their 20s are not contributing up to the extent employers are willing to match their 401k. Young employees are staying on their parents' health plans until age 26, and everyone's got a ping pong table. So what can employers do in order to create engagement, to create reasons why employees should stick around? Well, a great idea for them is to contribute to something that's very important in those employees' lives, which is getting out of student debt.
So give us the nuts and bolts of how does this work. Take us from the beginning. If you're looking to hire me and you have this benefit, how does it work? What are the steps?
So I would offer, I would say, hey, Steve, come join our company. You may be just entering the workforce out of undergrad, and you're strapped with that $37,000 in student debt. And we could say, Steve, we're going to give you $100 a month toward your student loans. You're going to keep making your minimum monthly payment. That means you're going to be out of debt in 7 years instead of 10. Or, you know, you're 22, you're entering the workforce. You're going to be out of debt by the time you're 30 if you stick with our company.
Now, is this like a tax benefit? Is this like being given a company car, or will people be taxed on this?
It is taxable. Okay. It's better to get it though than to not get it. And our anticipation is that government will change the tax treatment for this benefit in the next couple of years. We recently partnered with Congressman Dold to help introduce the Help for Students and Parents Act. That is currently being reviewed by the U.S. House of Representatives Ways and Means Committee. If passed, that bill will allow employers to contribute pre-tax dollars toward employee student loans. We believe that with student debt being a topic on the national stage through on both sides of the aisle through the presidential race, that the bipartisan support that Dold's bill and Congressman Davis's bill have gotten in the House, the bipartisan support that Senator Warner's bill has in the Senate, will ultimately lead to tax reform that includes this legislation on student debt and making it tax advantage for employers and employees in the next couple of years.
Our morning business conversation this morning with David Aronson, the founder and CEO of Peanut Butter. It's a company that helps companies, businesses, reach out to millennials and offer student loan repayment as a benefit, work benefit for coming to them. We'll continue our conversation with David coming up in the CEO Spotlight here on the Opening Bell for this Monday.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, U.S. stocks closed moderately lower on Friday. The Dow fell 87 points to 18,123. The S&P 500 index fell 8. The NASDAQ composite dropped 5 points. Asian markets overnight were picking up steam. The Fed is expected to hold interest rates steady this week after it ends a two-day meeting on Wednesday. That should help to lift markets. Some had predicted the Fed would raise rates 4 times this year after a slight uptick in December. Drivers in the eastern part of the country may have to pay more for gasoline after the shutdown of a leaking pipeline in Alabama. Experts believe that any price spike should be only temporary. The Colonial Pipeline Company says it doesn't expect to fully reopen its primary gasoline pipeline until next week. They're building a temporary one now. A co-founder of the Lyft ride-hailing service is looking into a crystal ball and predicts that self-driving cars will handle a majority of his company's rides within 5 years. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. In the CEO Spotlight today, David Aronson, the founder and CEO of Peanut Butter, a student loan repayment firm that's helping companies actually make this benefit, offer it to you as a new employee. It is something that is a big deal because a lot of people have this student loan debt, $1.2 trillion of it, according to the most recent surveys. David with us in the studio this morning to talk about it. David, so I'm interested to know, how do you make money on this? And is it something, we mentioned the taxes, but is there a fee for the employee?
It's free to employees. So companies hire us much like they would hire the administrator of another benefit. So they, instead of hiring extra HR people, instead of building systems to keep their employees' information safe and secure, and instead of having HR work with finance to manage payments out to dozens of different loan servicers, they hire us so that we can administer the benefit program. We can provide them with benchmarking and advice on how to structure the plan. We can provide them with access to our secure system for both the plan administration as well as enrollment and employee management. And then we manage the payments out to different loan servicers so it's not a burden on the company. We then provide reporting back to the employer and the employee and support when anyone has questions, whether it's a question about the from the employee about the benefit I'm receiving, or it's in a question from the employer about how we should recraft our plan for the coming benefit year.
And if I'm an employee who gets this benefit, and let's say I leave after a year, do I pay that back, or is it am I on the hook for anything?
In most cases, no. It's up to the company as to whether they create a contractual arrangement with their employees as a stipulation for receiving this benefit. But what we're seeing is that most employers choose not to do that. That's a common practice for other benefits like tuition reimbursement. With tuition reimbursement, companies are often providing a large dollar amount, typically over $5,000 up front. So they'll say, hey, Steve, if you leave within 2 years, you got to pay us back. Well, that's different than student loan repayment, both in the magnitude of the amount as well as the frequency of the payment. With student loan repayment, companies are typically contributing just $100 a month, $1,200 a year, so it's a lot less than $5,000 in total, and it's paid monthly, so that it ensures that you're only getting it when you stay. So if you leave after a year of receiving student loan repayment, the company's only out $1,200 versus $5,000 if they had contributed that towards tuition reimbursement.
Is it something that you're seeing companies give this as a, for instance, instead of getting 3 weeks of vacation or 2 weeks of vacation, I'll get a week and this benefit? Or is this in addition to those benefits? Is it impacting negatively those other benefits, or is it a complete enhancement?
It's typically a complete enhancement. It's employers saying it's really important for us to get the right people in the right seats, the right salespeople, the right developers. We need great talent to drive our organization, and we want to differentiate from our competitors.
Because this generation, the millennial generation, this is the sought-after generation. We've seen McDonald's, for instance, moving their headquarters downtown so they could have access to this new talent pool. And if they're all drowning in debt, that's going to be hard, right?
You got it.
And so this is if nothing is done, if more companies don't do this, what kind of impact do you think this is going to have on that economy?
I think that it's hard to say what will happen if employers don't do it. We're seeing such a sea change in how many employers offer this. It was forecast, or there was a study completed by the Society for Human Resources Management last year that said 3% of employers offered student loan repayment in 2015. There's another study from a different group that came out this year that cited it at 8% of employers. And a large human resources consultancy recently published a study that forecasts that 26% of employers will offer student loan repayment by 2018. So it feels like we're in the the tides have shifted and the water's rising, so to speak. Employers are taking up on this, and it's the employers who are slow to the game to offer this market-leading benefit that will see a disadvantage in hiring and in retention.
So I'm dying to know, where did the name peanut butter come from?
Well, we think it's the benefit that your employees will stick around for.
Okay.
But it's also
to the roof of your mouth.
It's also the only thing that I could afford to eat when I was in college.
When I usually talk to CEOs about this, finding the name of the company is usually the hardest decision, one of the hardest decisions they make when launching a company. How long do you have to think about this?
Well, I was eating peanut butter.
Or plain? Just the smooth or crunchy?
Always crunchy. Yeah. I was looking for domain names. There was one available that seemed like it would fit, and my wife thought it was a pretty good idea. So it passed the highest hurdle of them all, and we went with it.
You mentioned that you've heard 4-6% of employers. How do you get that to grow? Where do you see your company going?
So we are working with employers that are typically among the best places to work or the most admired companies. Here in Chicago, Upright Law has already announced their plan. They are one of the fastest growing legal tech companies in the country. I see employers in technology, healthcare, professional services, and financial services. Those companies that employ college-educated workforces and typically younger folks and who are competing for the most sought-after talent, developers, designers, digital marketers, as being among the first who will announce their plans. I think the benefit will proliferate in those industries as it gets more and more competitive. And then we'll see it evolve into other industries like education and private education, industries where you have a lot of people with degrees or advanced degrees supporting a field organization like manufacturing or engineering. And it becomes more prevalent in those areas where there is this war for talent and employers need to differentiate.
This country has too. We always say we're the greatest country on earth. There are other countries who provide free education to their kids. And in this country, it just seems we had a story earlier this week about kids are actually using credit cards to pay for tuition. Has it gotten to the point where it's almost insulting? Do you think, in your experience, if you had to look at the big picture of how this works?
So I was fortunate to attend two great institutions, Valparaiso and Northwestern. And at the time, while I have taken on student debt and am still paying off some of that student debt, there were a lot of great options. But I think I was also fortunate to have smart people in my life who helped me understand the financial ramifications of how that debt works, what it means to take on a high interest rate loan from a credit card, or what it means to study this study finance versus studying the arts, and that's a tough trade-off, but it's also a market-based trade-off that people make on their own. So I think each one of us, it's up to each one of us to, and we've got the opportunity to look at where we want to make our living, what the job prospects look like, what the economy looks like in that area, and why we should invest, if we should invest in a certain education versus another education.
Is the model of peanut butter such that you have to stay with the student loan part of this, or can you see a point where you might expand for other benefits too? Are there other things that you might include that millennials would love to have as work benefits?
We think there's a lot of employers and a lot of employees who we can help with student loan repayment, but strategically, we will always focus on serving the employer, providing them with advice and administration for leading benefits that help them engage talent and attract talent. And that's our vision for the company, is that now we see this need for student loan repayment, and we think it's really big. But the best way to figure out how to help our clients is to keep a pulse on what their employees want and how they can best engage those employees. So I don't know what the next service might be, but we will continue to focus on providing efficiencies and effective solutions for companies to accomplish their talent goals.
I'll ask the question another way, and that is, I know you've probably heard either through meetings or anecdotally, what is the number two after student loans would be the biggest thing that is affecting millennials? Maybe not something that your company is going to get into, but what is the number two thing, would you say?
Number two thing that's affecting
getting a new ping pong table, getting out of your parents' basement, housing.
I think for just it's hard to say.
You've got peanut butter stuck on the top of your mouth. No, it's a tough question, and I know you've got this. This is your big project now, and it seems to be going well.
Thanks.
Are you positive about where that is heading? I mean, you seem to be getting a lot of national attention, a lot of local attention, obviously, but national attention's nice, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're really excited to be helping companies in Chicago and beyond. Companies in lots of different industries. It's neat to see to get involved in the conversations with business leaders and see where the need arises, whether it's by state, by function, by industry. And it's something that, you know, we go home at night, my team and I, and we feel good at not just about how we're helping employers, but in turn how we're enabling them to help their employees. It's something that employers feel really good about when they help employees avoid thousands or tens of thousands of dollars in principal and interest, help employees get out of debt years sooner than they otherwise would. And we play a small part in helping our employer clients do that.
We often hear too much about Silicon Valley and other places in the country where these businesses like yours come from, but Chicago has its success stories. What is it about Chicago that's helped you?
Well, the biggest thing that's helped us is 1871. Mm-hmm. There's no better place that I could imagine to build a company, especially a technology company, than 1871 Chicago, which for anyone who doesn't know, is the number one technology incubator in the country. They've currently got about 500 member organizations and over 2,000 people who are in their space a day. It's a space of about 130,000 square feet within the Merchandise Mart, which is right in the center of technology within Chicago. But it's so much more than space. It's a great group of people who lead the organization, who have created an ecosystem that helps foster innovation. So that, to me as an entrepreneur, that has meant the opportunity to interact with leading companies that are looking for innovation and innovative solutions, the opportunity to meet experienced entrepreneurs and business leaders who have provided meaningful advice, and to do it in a place where lots of other people are working really hard to build their companies. In a way, I compare it to the time I spent in business school, only these couple of years, it's been about a year for me and our group that's been building out of 1871. Folks, you take a couple of years of your life and a couple hundred thousand dollars of your money or someone else's money, and you try to do something really meaningful. And it's great to be surrounded by a group of people who are putting their blood, sweat, and tears sometimes, and their money on the line to build something meaningful. And that's really been a pleasure and an honor.
Congratulations on your success, and we look forward to following Peanut Butter.
Thanks, Steve.
David Aronson is founder and CEO of Peanut Butter, student loan repayment. Aronson, 20 years of business experience. And by the way, congratulations to Peanut Butter. Out of about 643 nominees, they were one of the top 100 finalists for the 2016 Chicago Innovation Awards.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. A high-tech upgrade for liver transplants.
I think it's a major advance.
A new portable device known simply as Liver in a Box lets doctors keep a donated liver operating and functioning just like it's in the body, rather than the traditional process of putting it on ice once it's removed. Dr. James Markman is with the MGH Liver Transplant Program.
We try to keep it as it would be in the body, so we give it oxygen and blood and nutrients to allow it to function physiologically. We think that keeping it on the pump for a period may actually improve the organ before we put it in.
The invention could also help with organ shortages and long waiting lists. Right now, doctors often discard a liver if they can't be sure it'll function. And since it keeps the liver functioning, it may also mean organs can be transported longer distances before surgery.
We won't know until many of these are done how great a benefit there is. And I think this is probably the biggest innovative step in many years.
With Tech Trends, I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
The Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:41. Last week in San Francisco, some of the biggest, best startups in the world competed at TechCrunch, the magazine TechCrunch. Their startup battlefield called Disrupt San Francisco. There were 25 startups in all. After 3 days of competition, the judges decided on a winner. A company called Mobilytics. Mobilytics is a coach for competitive gamers so they can discover their weaknesses and make adjustments for future success. It's an esports startup and incredibly popular. Mobilytics will win $50,000. We wanted to talk about some of the other things and how important this is to the startup community. And so we've brought in Laura Kolodny, who writes for TechCrunch. She had the wonderful opportunity to sit in on some of these presentations. They each got time on stage. She joins us this morning from San Francisco via Skype. So, Laura, how big of a deal was this? Who was the winner? What was your takeaways?
Every hardware company is now also a software company. Silicon Valley is crazy about self-driving vehicles and all the surrounding technologies, and esports is nonstop. It's just it's another one of the hottest trends. I guess that's three things, but those were big takeaways.
And so, and that's sort of reflected in the winner of Disrupt. Tell me a little bit about the winner.
Okay, right. A big part of Disrupt is three things. It's a hackathon where developers come out and get to play with all the new APIs from, you know, cutting edge companies, and they come up with some really imaginative stuff. It's the main stage where we have, you know, big names in tech and actually tech-related media and entertainment come and talk about all the trends and issues they're dealing with. And then the startup battlefield. This is the competition that gets skewered in the Silicon Valley series on HBO, or let's say, you know, paid tribute to. And it's probably the highest profile business and innovation competition out there. The winners this year were a company called Mobilytics. They have created basically an analytics platform that helps people in esports, basically professional gamers, find their weaknesses and skill up so they can get to the top tier and start winning the big prize money in the biggest games out there. They're starting with League of Legends. They're looking to move on to games like Dota 2, where there are already established leagues and, you know, big prizes.
And these are the people that really are nuts about these sort of game, if you want to call it a game, this this whole industry. It's probably a better way to describe it, industry. What will this help us do? Will it help me win at this game?
When you're playing esports, it's not like, you know, just playing on your own console on a network at home. It's like there's a lot of technology that goes in, sort of digital referee, leveling the playing field, making sure everyone's getting, you know, equivalent challenges. And I mean, it's very competitive. Stadiums are packed and there is real prize money in esports. It may just seem like video games, but this is level up. People stream their games on Twitch, on other platforms, YouTube, and wow, thousands to millions of people tune in to watch these folks. It does seem niche, but it's not. It's actually huge. There are even college scholarships for esports players, which is,
yeah,
it seems funny, but this is getting serious. And so Mobilytics is tapping into this trend and, yeah, helping gamers who want to go pro recognize where they're weak, work on those in-game skills, and get more competitive so they can really go pro or improve within the ranks.
And so what do they win as the Disrupt champion?
Mobilytics gets an investment prize. You know, you're not committed to take – it's an investment offer from – some of the firms that judge, and it's,
I think it's like $50,000, right? It's not anything to cough at, is it?
Yeah, it's enough seed money to help you, you know, really move forward. And honestly, the platform, there's so much exposure. We had more video views of Disrupt content this year than in the entire history of the conference. And, you know, we have like millions of followers on your Twitter and Facebook, and it's companies really want to do this for both the investment prize, but also the exposure to users, to other developers, to other investors beyond our own judging panel.
And I think people who are in this sort of area know what Disrupt and know what we're talking about. But this event is this year, you've pulled in quite a few big name speakers and judges. Give us a sense of who was there to watch all of this and judge all of it.
The people on stage outside of the judging panel, exactly, you mentioned Ash Carter with the Department of Defense was there to talk about everything that's all the concerns people have about our own government surveying, you know, the citizenry. And, you know, he talked about how the Department of Defense works with startups, you know, for military innovation and national security innovation. Mm-hmm. We had Marc Andreessen, who's always quotable, one of the most influential investors, if not the most, in venture capital. One of the panels, one of the fireside chats that got a lot of attention was this famous hacker who's now running a company called Comma.ai. This is a new idea in self-driving cars. They make an aftermarket part, kind of looks like a dash cam, replaces your rear view mirror, and brings you the kind of technology that enables Tesla's autopilot features, you know, driver assistive technology that can basically get you from Silicon Valley to Mountain View closely without touching a wheel. This guy, George Hotz, he's not afraid to talk turkey. He took down, you know, he's calling out Elon Musk. He called Kyle Vogt, who also spoke at our conference, a sellout for selling his startup to GM in a $1 billion acquisition. They're working on related computer vision and self-driving car technology. This was a really interesting session. And like I said, he was just very candid and very ambitious. So a lot of people tune in for that. We had a great panel on women's health, on technology for women's health. The three founders on stage happen to be all women.
I want to go back to the Comma thing because this is kind of cool. I mean, these self-driving cars, the autonomous cars, this is what everybody is talking about everywhere. And if I understand right, this package, this $999 package, he's comparing this to this Comma.ai almost to a Tesla.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, but at that level where it's more affordable, where you can have it installed, you know, on a car that's older, I mean, it's for a limited number of models, but right, like think about the potential if this expands, the vehicles won't have to go to the landfill, right? Or they won't get, you know, just sold down the line as people want to adopt more, you know, smart technology, driver assistive technology. And this also enables things like AI and computer vision to begin, you know, helping people prevent accidents, the kind that, you know, regular human drivers get into all the time. The great hope is that technology like this can prevent accidents from sleepy drivers, things like that. It's, like I said, it has yet to be seen what it can deliver on. It's really ambitious.
Yeah, because if you compare the price, just the price alone, it's $100,000 car for some of these Teslas. I know Chevy introduced theirs this week. It's going to be about $38,000. $999 is not bad.
It's reasonable. Yeah.
Let's talk about the other thing. One of the other things that you covered, and that was had to do with agriculture, Rex Animal Health. Tell me a little bit about that.
So, okay, Rex Animal Health started out as a kind of ZocDoc for pets, helping pet parents, you know, find a good veterinarian to take their sick dog to. But then the company tapped into something larger and decided to bring big data analytics, genomics, and phenotyping analysis to the livestock industry. What this essentially allows veterinarians to do, the kind that are working with big livestock suppliers, is to figure out and prioritize what kind of testing they should do first based on sicknesses that are affecting animals in the area, right? So it's a sort of epidemiological health weather map for pigs, cows, sheep, whatever, livestock in the area. And it's really advanced tech and science. It's really at the forefront. They didn't actually make it to our very final crew in the battlefield, but I love the idea, and they're raising funding to do more genome analysis out of their lab here in San Francisco.
Laura Kolodny out at San Francisco's TechCrunch. I know that you've been kind of crazy covering all of these different tech events, the big Disrupt conference last week. We're going to continue our conversation with Laura after the bell and put more of that up online for you as well when we post our podcast later this morning. Laura Kolodny is a reporter at TechCrunch. You can find out more about some of these winners at TechCrunch.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:56. Time to check commodities on the WGN Market Desk. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we prepare for another marketing week, eyes will be on the weather in the grain market because we did see a pretty good bounce on Friday because of concerns over wet weather slowing harvest in those areas where it's ready to start rolling. So I guess this week we'll be watching where and when and how much rain might fall in those harvest-ready areas. But that concern on Friday sent the nearby soybean contract up 15¾ cents. It sent the corn contract nearby up 6¼ cents. And those two commodities pulled wheat higher, up 4 cents for the day on Friday. And again, we saw live cattle marking the third day of advances at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, with the October live contract back up to $107.87, gaining 85 cents last Friday. September feeder cattle gained $1.27 to end at $135.5. And the October lean hog contract gained 27 cents Friday to close at $55.47. Monsanto made a lot of news last week. The Bayer-Monsanto get-together, of course. But then on Friday, the report came from the Environmental Protection Agency that the basic ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, glyphosate, is not likely carcinogenic to humans. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. We'll continue to follow Your Money throughout the morning. Steve Cochran shows next. Back tomorrow morning at 5. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.